90.3.
Your station.
Near FM.
Welcome, lovely listeners. Welcome back to Between the Lines. And I have to say, it's really nice to be back after the summer break. And I'm sure you've missed us. With all these newspapers coming out, mind you, they don't write anything terribly interesting in the month of August. It's all a bit daft, so probably wouldn't have had anything to talk about. We've loads to talk about this morning. I'm joined by Ger Dorgan and Catherine Gibney. Thank you very much. It's nice to have you back again and nice to be sitting in front of you. I've missed it all last year. Now, I was busy at the weekends doing, I decided to do a study course, so I thought something has to give, and I abstained from coming on the Sundays, but I've really, really missed it. Anybody who's listening, if you want to join in this morning, we have a text number, 087-6944-500. That's 087-6944-500 if you want to text in. If you want to give us a ring, it's 867-1190. That's 867-1190. We welcome all of your comments. We'd love to hear from you. So we're going to start off this morning with... Now, the most popular topic, the one that the entire country is completely obsessed about, the economy and the choices. Where is the money going to come from? Ger, you have some strong feelings about this one.
Well, as you know, I have strong feelings about everything.
Everything, actually, yes. That's what I love about the panellists here.
And on this particular one, before I say it, I think there's a lot of bad news in the country at the moment, but I think we shouldn't let the situation pass without complimenting both our Olympic teams and our Paralympic teams. Yeah. Who have done fantastic work, in competing for Ireland, and to see the Aran Evian played 8 times in the past week is absolutely fantastic.
Is it 16 medals and 8 goals?
16 medals and 8 goals. But I suppose the important thing about that is that those people have got support both from their families, their communities, and the medical profession, and actually the government as well. And there is now kind of a growing recognition that that athletes, be they in the Special Olympics, be it in the Paralympics, or be it in what's called the Standard Olympics, that they are athletes, and what they're concentrating on is their abilities rather than their disabilities. And I think we should thank very much the organisers in London, who have done a fantastic job to have a stadium full the whole week for Paralympic athletes and them getting the recognition they deserve. I thought that was one of the heartening things of the summer for me. So I think there's some things we do get right, and that seems to have been got right. And it also highlights to the general public, you know, that those people are athletes, and there are a lot of people in your village who are in your town or around this city here who are physically disabled, but plenty good enough and strong enough and courageous enough to get involved in the top levels of sport. And that's the message we should take away from this.
Yeah, but I don't want to pour cold water on what you're saying, Ger, but the ordinary run-of-the-mill disabled person who isn't a superb athlete is not getting the support that they need from the government, and it's the continuing lack of support that's causing people an awful lot of concern. Parents of disabled children who are worried about services being withdrawn. I mean, it's fine to talk about, and of course, hats off to people who've done really well in the Paralympics, yeah. But if you look at the broad mass of disabled people, they are not getting the same encouragement and support that our athletes have.
Yeah, and to be fair, they're not getting the same support or haven't been getting the same support and recognition from the community in general, and the attitudes towards people with disabilities needs to change. I mean, we saw it during the week, and it gets on to what we're talking about, the economy with the personal assistance.
Absolutely.
And the absolute mess that the government made of that, and James O'Reilly in particular. It would seem to me that he wasn't up to date on his brief. Now, there was a change of mind on that, and that was brought up really by people like by Labour Party, by Keaveney, the chair of the Labour Party, and also by Eoghan Reardon here locally, who I know was. But there seems to be a disconnect. And this has been with governments for a long time, between what's happening on the ground Labour made a balls up of the, if I can say that on radio, of the Desh, of the Desh schools. But Rory Quinn came out, put up his hand and said, I got it wrong. But they need to look they need to look at all of these the downstream effects of action.
We've been joined by Catherine by Enda Roach this morning. Welcome, nice to see you.
Thank
you're
you.
Looking
Thank
great.
You.
Hi, Enda.
Now, Enda, you're shaking your head there.
Yeah, I totally disagree that Labour had anything to do with the change. I think the rollback came because people who are disabled took things into their own hands, went down and protested and said, we are not putting up with this. And what I found really interesting, and I thought it showed quite a horrible side to what's happening now with regard to the government, they rolled back on the what they were saying they were going to do in terms of disabled and dumped it all on the elderly, people who need home help, people who can't get out there and sit out there and protest and say, we're staying here till you change. And I thought that was really significant. I thought it was brilliant to see the people, disabled people getting out and saying, we're not putting up with this and mm-hmm. this will change. And mm-hmm. it did. But unfortunately, the people now who are taking the full brunt are the people who couldn't actually, the poorest of this society, who cannot speak up for themselves, who are totally in need of our help, who are just to function, just to be up in the morning and not to be lying in a bed on a drip all day. And because they couldn't get out and do it, they have now to take the brunt of all the cuts.
Well, but I think what's going to happen there is, and I speak, I know whereof I speak in this instance, because I'm in receipt of a home care package for my aunt who's 89. I couldn't manage without that. I simply couldn't, and she couldn't function without the assistance that we get. But, I mean, if there's any question of my care package being reduced, she'd simply have to go into hospital.
And how much is that going to cost us?
Well, I mean, exactly.
Well, I think that's the
question, wasn't it?
But that's the argument. That's the argument that's going on now. Because I mean, my mother-in-law stayed with us for 18 months, and we had somebody coming in from the health services for an hour a day,
and they're fantastic.
And it was absolutely, and it was absolutely vital. Right, and I think it's for people in both parties to make this known to the people who make the decisions. Look, this country is in trouble. But how we deal with this, and where we decide if there has to be cuts, where they call, we're cutting. We can't keep cutting, and we shouldn't be cutting from the people at the lower end of society. I agree with you 100%, Enda. And it was good to see those people going out. It was terrible that they had to go out and take to the streets, right? But what we need to do is and it's been done within the parties. People are made fully aware that what's happening is not acceptable. The easy targets as have been absolutely milked dry. The most vulnerable in our society need to be protected and have to be protected. And I think that should be part of what Labour should be doing in government. And that message is going to the ministers and is going very clearly to the parliamentary party as well. You know, we have to make choices. We're facing into a terrible budget.
Well,
right? We're facing into a terrible budget, but it's the choices that we make as a people, and that's what everybody's going to be watching over the next 3 months.
Well, let's mull over that a little bit, actually.
Yeah,
the
can
choices.
Just come in on that for a second. I think we have just said, myself and Catherine said, I know because we had my mother-in-law was quite ill for quite some time, and we had home care, and it was brilliant, but it was very very sparse and very, you know, very low, but. When we all said, and the three of us said it together, and I suppose we'd all be in agreement, well, you know, you're talking about going into hospital and how much is that going to cost the state. But even in that, there lies a problem. Because we're saying, oh, this is about money, and it shouldn't be. It should be about the care of the people in our society who need the care. I mean, when you look at people in NAMA, and I remember the head of NAMA saying, sure, one of the poor unfortunates is only on 200,000 a year. That's what he's getting from NAMA. He a failed developer, and he only getting 200,000 a year. I mean, where are our priorities? These people should be on the dole, and the money that's being fed into them should be going into places where it's needed. And it shouldn't be down to the fact, well, if we put people in hospitals, it's going to cost us more. No, we should be looking after the people who need looking after in the best way possible. And it shouldn't be, obviously money has to come into it, but like there's a whole notion out that, you know, all the low hanging fruit is gone. No, it's not. There's plenty of people on plenty of money, plenty of top civil servants, people in government, ex-ministers milking this state. And that just has to be cut out. And we really do have to get down, and we have to get down and look at our priorities. But when you're saying to the government, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that, you're talking about turkeys and Christmas, and I just can't see it happening.
Yeah, but we're all in this together, surely, and aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We're all in it
We're all in it together.
Well, of course we are. And the question is, I mean, you're having two different halves, aren't you? One arguing don't cut taxes because it'll kill business. Well, the other arguing don't cut costs because the people can't take any cuts in their income. We're joined by Dermot Brangan again. Lovely to have you here, Dermot. Good morning.
Apologies. Well, good morning,
done.
To all.
No, you've been doing a lovely morning.
It's great to be back.
Enjoying the music this morning. It was absolutely lovely. Yeah, have you thoughts here? We're talking. We want to really focus on the choices of where should the cuts come from, as opposed to what areas need to be protected. What areas can we not cut? What areas can we cut? We're not meeting. Where our ends are not meeting at the end of each week. We're not making enough money to cover our costs. Our ends are so far estranged they're barely even talking to each other, let alone meeting. So, how are we going to bridge that gap without going near debt, paying back debts? We're not thinking about paying back debts. We're a million miles away from it. But we just need to make ends meet at the moment. So, how are we going to do that? Any suggestions?
Yeah, my suggestions are that I think the way the government has gone about the whole thing is absolutely bonkers. There's no thought in it. They're hitting the vulnerable. The country is run roughly between 65 and 73% of the money required to run the country is coming from the PAYE worker. So if that is so, to me, they're not dealing with business because they're not able to handle it. Or as you rightly said, it's like Turkey's voting for Christmas. They won't touch the business section that can afford this.
Dermot? I mean, but what business section? You talk to business and small business and they're said to have been taxed out of existence.
They were talking about one of our millionaires who pays 200,000 a year in tax. One of our multimillionaires running massive businesses. Now, there's a whole list of them in the paper there in the last week or 10 days. And I take them out because they hit a raw note with me. And I think, you know, it's all right saying, where do we get the money from? But why on earth do we have to look at the same vulnerable people all the time? Look at the first five things the government did when they got into power. They hit the young, the vulnerable and the aged. Now, Fianna Fáil hit the aged and a march tore them back a pace or two. But this government has come in, and while they were in opposition, they were telling us all the things Fianna Fáil were doing wrong. They're doing the goddamn same things themselves.
Except they're backing down much more quickly. I mean,
But I think people power has to play a part, and I think people have to shout. We've got to. It's like telling us all by television to send in £100. My attitude is, send me a goddamn bill and I'll send you your £100. But I won't send it into you on a headline in a paper.
But this is the way this government is working, Dermot. They make a decision and then people say, no, we're not going to do it. So there's a protest and they roll back.
They're not making decisions.
That's not
being dictated to by Europe. And Europe can see that they haven't the business wherewithal to run the country. And they're dictating to them, and rightly so at the moment.
They're not dictating, but what you have is, you have a lack of sovereignty at the moment. What you have is that Ireland is, it could not function without the money we're getting from Europe. We couldn't.
Of course.
So the people are sort of saying, we want our money back. Now, it's very easy to talk about, you know, if there's nobody here, there's nobody in this country. Everybody wants all the services, but nobody wants to pay tax. Should there be a third level of tax? There should be.
Of course there should.
I'm a great believer in people power. Always have been, right? Mm. But for a lot of people in this country, they see politics as a kind of a soccer, like a football match. The ups and downs. We need to look into the implications. I've been on marches down the years on various things that I believed in, and you'd see very few people coming to the streets. You know, you see people go out and do a march and they think it's done. It's the Joe Duffy syndrome, that people think if you talk to Joe that it's sorted.
In some cases, it is strangely enough,
but you know what I mean? The situation is that once you... No, and I don't believe Joe has that kind of power. But the whole thing is that it gets vexed and we should lock him up, kill him, do whatever we like with him, and it falls after 3 days. We've never done long-term planning in this country. When this country was awash with money, we didn't look after the carers. We didn't look after the home helps. We did nothing. We did very little on the social aspect aspect and on a community aspect to support communities. And what I think is terrible is, and we see it here, we're involved here, all of us here around this table are involved in the community to some degree or other. And what we see now is the emasculation of a lot of the community groups who came out of the community over the last 10 years having their funds cut. And if this continues, we're going to end up losing a lot of talented people, and we're going to lose a lot of services in local communities which are vital and which will take another generation to regrow.
I don't think it's a problem that people don't want to pay tax.
Somebody else needs to pay
it. Hold on a second. I don't mind paying tax, but I take great exception to paying tax for my money to be going into the sort of things it's going into. Like Bertie Ahern getting his car to bring him all places to promote his book. Why should I, or anybody else, and I am hard pressed, why should I be paying taxes into this country when that's what the money's going to? That's why people in Ireland don't want to pay tax, because forever the taxes have been going to all sorts. I was listening to
people voted Bertie Ahern into power 3 times in the knowledge that that's the kind of person he was, in the knowledge that that's the kind of politics that was there. People went into the van, they voted for somebody local. So he's a great old fella, goes to all the funerals, and so he's a great man to go for a pint with.
Yeah,
We did it as a community. We put him into government.
Yeah, but you're saying people don't want to pay tax. I'm saying I think if people see something decent for their tax, they have no problem paying tax. They have problems, and down the years it's always been the same. You pay your road tax, where does it go? Nobody knows, doesn't go into the roads, it goes missing. Why should people want to pay tax?
It's accountability, isn't it? It's lack of accountability.
And in some places where we know where it's going, I don't like it. I think that if TDs knew that when they lost their seat, they're on the dole like everybody else, well, I tell you, they'd be making very, very different policies with regard to the dole and assistance and everything else, because people are in a certain little bubble and it doesn't really matter. They're not affected by the things. I was listening to, I think it was Nora Owen recently on the radio. And everything is not hilarious. And if she had to get in and get her pension and a fair but equitable pension when everybody else said, I tell you, there'd be very, very different attitude, because some people are just totally disconnected to what's going on around them.
Well, if we look at one situation that has gone on, right, going back through the last government when we were on riding the waves money wise, and what improvements did you see in health? Absolutely zero.
That's what I was saying earlier.
We've a new government in power now, and it's the goddamn same. No better than Mary Harney. There's nothing happening, and the public are taking the knock. But who are the public that are taking the knock? It's the sick and the elderly. I mean, we've got to ask ourselves, who the hell have we in government? And why should we have to wait 4 years to vote somebody else in? We should march and get the bloody shaggers out.
Which is not
okay. Let's follow that.
We have a caller in. Vincent Quinn, who is a very loyal listener to Near FM, has rung in this morning, and he feels one of the ways that money could be saved is if ministers and TDs worked to the minimum wage, there would be no need for cuts. Unfortunately, Vincent, there probably would be a need for ministers and TDs, because I'm not sure that too many would do the work for the minimum wage anyway.
But you never know. There might be a few people who are really strong in our community and who would make a very good job of it and would be only too happy to go in and work for the minimum wage.
I respect the massive hours they put in, but I do think a lot of them are not capable of doing their jobs.
Well, how conservative is it?
When you have a government there, any good sports person can be elected a TD, but nobody should be given a ministerial portfolio without having the business background or the qualification through university or whatever. In other words, there's people going in there doing jobs. They might have qualified as a teacher, but how basic is that? Like, we had a couple of teachers in the last government, and they couldn't string a couple of sentences together. And these were representing us.
No, Dermot, I want to go back to
elected now, and Dermot. They're all chosen by the people.
Let me tell you, the Minister for Health is qualified.
Oh, he's a doctor.
He's a doctor, and he was very involved in actually doing the deal for the consultants
the
Irish Medicines Board. So, you know, by your criteria, he's possibly the only one in government who's qualified to be a minister.
We hate him,
Dermot, you were saying, you know, those people shouldn't be in. Let's get them out. And then what?
Yeah. And then hold what? On, hold on.
And then what?
Hold on. Look at Sweden for two decades. For two decades, businessmen ran the country in their spare time. They ran it in the evening. Full-time businessmen. And look at the economy there. Look at the state of the health services, etc.
So they're not politicians for 20 years?
No. They were part-time. They ran the country in the evening for two decades. And made a damn good job of it. Now, what I'm saying is, you're saying our Minister for Health is highly qualified. He is highly qualified, but there is none of them biting the bullet to say that five, six or seven bodies that were brought together and brought under one umbrella, the HSE, how in God's name, what businessman would buy up seven businesses and say there's going to be no redundancies? He's trying to coordinate the whole thing to bring it together.
No, excuse me, but he's actually doing away. He's actually doing away with it.
No redundancy.
No, I,
and it
I
didn't
will.
Happen. No, now we're paying them for the last 12 years or whatever since the HSE was set up, and I think this is a goddamn scandal. If you brought Michael O'Leary and three other good businessmen into listen. He would make decisions regardless of what you thought, and that's what's needed. None of these are statesmen.
Where does democracy come in then? Get three or four people. Get three or four people to come in and make the decisions for us.
Gentlemen, to your corners now.
For God's sake!
Now we're all friends. We love each other. Remember that. Catherine brought up a love, and I. She remembered something to us actually earlier, before we started. Clause 128.
When you're talking
of the Croke Park deal.
I can't understand why it hasn't been invoked.
Tell the listeners exactly what clause 128 is.
It just means, I don't have the exact wording, but it just simply means that this deal stands provided it can be paid for. And if the circumstances of the country change, we've got to go back to the table.
Well, Brussels' attitude to the Croke Park agreement is they're quite happy to let it ride out for the 18 months or 20 months is left in it.
I'm not happy to let
I know
it
you're
out.
Not. None of us are. But Brussels are dictating to us.
Ray sent us round an article there from the Irish Times on that was written on Tuesday, the 4th of September. Mm. And I think we all probably got a chance to look at it. Written by Ian Talbot, the Chief Executive of Chambers Ireland. Now, predictably enough, his slant was, let's not pay tax because it'll kill business. So you did expect that. But he did have one kind of interesting observation, that in the public sector, they're still getting pay increases. Now, one of the things that first came in the 70s, or when we were bad last time, was pay freezes.
Pay freezes.
So do you think that would be something that...
Well, it certainly would help.
I think it is necessary and it is important, because if you look at the different sections of the public service or whatever, especially when you look at teachers and other people who've lost a lot of money. I mean, how much have the politicians been hit?
Well, let's just leave them out of it.
Can we look at the Croke Park? It's a joke.
Can we look at the Croke Park agreement? Mm. The Croke Park agreement, right, has met the targets that have been set for it. And we should remember when we're talking about cutting pay that 80% of the people in the public service are at junior levels and are earning up to 30, not more than 35,000 a year. No, you cut their wages, right? And it'll be like what happened with the minimum wage.
Well, no.
We're not talking about
a pay freeze.
Yeah,
that's all. We're not talking about people on a basic salary.
The cost of living is
not going down. We're not talking about that. And I mean, that is what has actually happened in the private sector. People have had their money cut. It's not a pay freeze, it's money.
But there has been cuts already in the public service.
But it's the thousands that are on 200 plus in all walks of life. Yes. These are the people that should be targeted.
200,000 plus.
But these are the people with influence, so the politicians won't deal with them.
No, hang on.
Let's
deal first with the people, a lot of people who are on to 35, and a lot of them on less. But those people, well, look,
what do you want?
Get somebody else to pay. People who are having trouble paying their mortgages and finding their way already.
We're talking about pay freeze, but that's everybody. We're talking about a pay freeze across the board.
Should it be a pay freeze for everybody in the country?
Yes.
Yeah. But
private industry. Everybody else.
Private industry is already doing it.
Private industry is not doing it in all its forms. It is in some areas, but not in others.
But you said that Croke Park had met its achievement.
What was set out in the Croke Park agreement to this part it has been met. right? Like, no, benchmarking, and when benchmarking was brought in first, was during the time when things were good here, and I thought it was a nonsense myself, right? But you have an awful lot of people working the service who are struggling the same as people in, you know, and to say to them, you take a pay freeze. Dermot is right. We had a situation, you know, with people who are higher up in our society. We have a situation where councillors who are made TDs are getting a lump sum from city councils who don't have a bob to their name. Some of them 30 and 40,000. That's kind of a scrappage deal which was brought in two elections ago so as to get people to vacate and maybe make way for new blood coming in. And the test 30 or 40,000. We have a situation where independent TDs, now like Clairedale, well, Clairedale you won't get it because the likes of independent TDs get 45,000 a year.
She is an independent TD now.
Yes, she's an independent TD. But if you were an independent TD at the start of the Doyle term, when the right. Doyle came back in, mm-hmm. you got 45,000 a year as a leader allowance. This goes back to 1977 when Ahern's government needed the independents. The independents have argued that they need it because they don't have a party machine behind them. Mm-hmm. But independents with 45,000, so
that's
you have
for
some
their office, isn't it?
That's but a lot of them don't even stuff. Some of them don't even have offices, and it's not. I know there's separate money available for people and their offices set up charges mm-hmm. for offices. Mm-hmm. So you have independents who really get over the industrial the average industrial wage for being a leader. On top of that, they get their Doyle salary. On top of that, they get their expenses. Those are the kind of anomalies. If the state is, and if politicians in general are serious, they need to do away with all this nonsense.
Of course they do.
This nonsense of having turning up money. It's a disgrace. Now, I believe they cut it by 10 or 15%.
People would be lucky to have a job to turn
it should be eliminated.
It should be eliminated. And we should do away with all these other bits and pieces, you know. And you have to drag the information out, you know, and
what
discuss all parties.
As well, I once got expenses for travelling years ago because my job is funded by FOSS and they paid these expenses for training that they were making me go on. And I have to say the mileage was huge.
Mm.
If they
now.
Were to cut the mileage.
The mileage has been cut.
The mileage has been cut greatly. Civil service has been cut.
Silly.
In fact, you'd be looking at it now and you'd be saying, God, could I get a cup of coffee? Like, you know what I mean? It really has been.
And in fact,
with
the state cards, we're talking about Bertie Ahern earlier on and you know, taking, and Mary Harney did it as well. They're taking helicopters to open pubs and all this kind of stuff. The only ones now who I think have the state cards are the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, and I think the Minister for Justice. The other ministers get their own.
Don't they have cars and stuff?
No, they've done away with the ex-Taoiseachs. No. Bertie Ahern had to go off and do his driving test.
Mm. Yeah, no, they don't.
Which is gone.
They don't get anything except their pension,
which is an incredible amount.
But there's also when we're talking about pensions as well, we have people in the Doyle who have pensions already from. Mm-hmm. Firstly, I don't think any serving minister should be getting pensions, or anybody on the opposition who was a minister should be getting them until they're 60.
If you can't even get two pensions here, but you have people who are teachers, social welfare pensions, you can't be blind and a widow's pension.
No, we have people who are teachers.
I hate to interrupt you, but we're going to have to go to a break.
Just to
mull over. Is it true that in 1975 the top rate of tax was 77%? I mean, I googled that and I find it. I knew it was high.
It was very high. I mean, I never earned enough to have to pay 77%.
Well, there's something to think about while we go to a break. Thank you, Pat. Welcome back to Between the Lines this morning. We're having a great feisty discussion here on the economy. We nearly have it all sorted. If people want to contact us, that you can send a text at 087-6944-500, or you can call us on 867-1190. That's 867-1190. Pat Meehan is in the mixing sound desk and he will take your calls for you. Thanks, Pat. Hello. Lovely. Thank you. And while we have a chance, actually, we'd just like to say congratulations to Ray Burke. Ray runs the programme here on the Sunday mornings. He has just got his results. He's qualified. He's been doing media studies, we think, in
Maynooth. He's done a master's.
NUIM.
Yes.
It's a master's.
Yeah.
Very good. Well done, Ray. So he's got his results and he was out last night, we think, and that's why...
He was out last night. And if you're driving in the Maynooth area, please don't drive too close to the curb, you might hit him.
Yeah. Well done, well done, Ray.
Don't save Ray Burke. Don't hurt our Ray Burke, please. Well done, Ray. That is fantastic. It is a lot of work to do a master's. I'm just recovering, getting to the end of one myself, so don't do it. Anyone who's thinking about doing a master's, back away from the light.
You'll fly through it.
I suppose it's all right once you get to the end, and Ray has got to the end, and well done. Congratulations on that. So we're going to leave the economy for the moment, because really there are no problems left to solve, because we have sorted it all out. Ger, you wanted to say a little bit about the new children's referendum that's coming up, which is a lot of contentious stuff in it.
We don't know the wording of it yet, and it has been delayed, which I think is a shame. What I am afraid of is that when this referendum comes around, that like in many referenda in the past, we will debate everything but the referendum itself.
We'll get stuck on the salacious bits.
And it's not only the salacious bits, but everything else will be thrown into the mix as well. Mm-hmm. I can remember the first referendum on divorce. I met a guy coming out, I knew him. He was a Fianna Fáiler, and I said, how did you vote? And he said, that's one. He voted no. That's one in the eye for Garrett. Well, I said, did you agree with that divorce should be brought in? He said, oh yeah. But it's one in the eye for Garrett. Now, if people want to give the government a black eye, this will not be the referendum to do it on. We, as a state and as a nation, have let down children big time.
We have
over the last 40 or 50 years. Let's not add to that, right? We had a situation now, and I know that it's already kind of started. I'll just give you an example. Cathy Sinnott, who was a former MEP. Was stating that the state authorities could force parents to vaccinate their children against their will, right? She also says a bright and gifted child in the low income could be adopted out to someplace else if the state judged that to be in their best interest. And also during the week, we had five reports on dioceses throughout the country. It was made for very sober reading. The one that really hit me was the Bishop of Clonfert, who said that the paedophilia in that, he thought it was a friendship
crossed a boundary line.
Now, the church and a lot of people close to it, I know, we get involved if there's anything to do with legislation on the X case, but we might get a chance to come to that or some other evening, you know. But here was a learned man, a bishop for over 20 years. Now, I know when I was a child, when we were very young, we learned the things that you don't do to other people. You didn't even need the Stay Safe program come in the late 80s, so a lot of people knew what was right and what was wrong. And when you have an attitude like that, towards children and towards people in general, it doesn't bode well.
Well, people I think know intrinsically that that's wrong. You don't need to be told that. You don't need to stay safe.
You would think that they would know that.
Any right-thinking person.
But can I come in on that point there? Because when I heard that report on the news during the week, I said, my God, what have we got here? A child from the age of 7 knows what's right and by wrong, by instinct and by example from people around it. But how in God's name can a man go in and spend 7 years training to be a priest and go into confession then and tell your sins are absolved of your sins, or they're not absolved? How can he say he's given advice in confession and he doesn't know the goddamn basics? I mean, how gullible does he think the public are?
I want to steer this a little bit, because that's a separate argument.
It is separate, but elements of that
probably won't come up hugely in the children's referendum. Yeah. And it's really what this article, I think, is about. It's more really about how much the state interferes with somebody else's family when the situation
that's a lunatic fringe element now coming into that discussion there about the state coming in and taking away gifts.
But these will be arguments. Look, hello divorce, goodbye daddy.
Your point, Jerry, is very good there. But my attitude is, how in God's name can any discussion on a referendum be highly influenced by bishops that have proved to be totally inadequate in their knowledge of dealing with.
Dermot, yeah, they did look, it before, I think Dermot. They did it in the 50s
sorry,
with the mother.
Sorry, I think I apologise. I was saying that in passing. I don't want us to steer into a discussion on the church's role or on paedophilia. What I'm trying to do is to alert people to the
not
fact.
Not this morning. We might another morning, but
we probably will. In this situation, like the wording is due probably in September. We're told, right? The wording of this referendum, it should be available in 2 weeks, according to the children's minister. And then a referendum commission will be set up, and that will that will be in place for 30 days. So we're talking about late October or early November for that referendum, and that's a time where we're going to get into major discussions and kite flying on the budget. Now,
I fully respect what you're going to deal with there. The only point I was trying to make was that I fear the church's influence on the legislation coming in.
Sorry, Dermot.
I'm trying to get in there at one point.
I think that we're going to hear all sorts of stories from all sorts of places on both sides. And there'll be all sorts of kite flying. But I think you have to have an open debate, because if we don't have an open debate, people will be able to say, well, there was no open debate, it was all on, you know. But I think
people never mentioned
whatever. But I think that people would look at the pieces you've read there by Catherine Sinnott and just say, well, you know, we just don't buy that. We just don't believe it. It's just not going to happen.
Well, what's going to happen, I can remember the first divorce referendum where people were talking about succession rights in Ballymun Flats. You know, and that because that became part of it, that everybody's house would be taken from them. What I'm more interested in is, you know, I think the main part of the referendum is to recognise the child as a constitutional individual, with rights that are distinct to those of the family members, so they don't belong to anybody. They have their own rights as children. What I fear is that the way it's going to play out is that the forces who oppose divorce and a lot of any social legislation that came up here in the last 30 years.
You mentioned there abortion as well.
They will paint this as state interference, the nanny state, the state interference, you know, and the family is the basic unit of society, and it's the family against the state. The people have been failed over the children have been failed in this. I think anybody listening to this will know that children have been failed. Now the wording should be out in 2 or 3 weeks. We need to look at this thing on its own merits. If we allow this to become a vote of no confidence for the government, there's a danger that the amendment will be shot down. If that happens, we will be doing no service to the generations of children coming up or to children who are there today. So I would say that to people, there will be a temptation, given the state of the country, there will be a temptation to use this referendum to give the government a kick in. You're kicking your own. That's my own view on it. That if you're doing that, you're kicking your own families and the families of your friends and those going and the young people who are growing up now will become parents.
But as you say, Ger, there are people who have a certain, shall we say, right wing agenda.
Yes.
And
that's fine.
They will be coming out of the woodwork on this.
That's fine. And I pointed out what they will be doing. But I'm talking about most people in this country, most voters, right, wouldn't be either ideologically left or right. They look at things on it, hopefully on its merits, and what's right, what's the right thing to do, you know. And those are the people who really, please, we're talking to, because some people they have their own mindset, and no matter what happens, they will keep to that, and that's people's privilege. What I'm saying is to the great majority of people who don't belong to either camp, right, is that we need to deal with this issue on its merits. It's too important.
Is it easy, do you think it's easy, though, at any point to judge when is it the right time to take a child from their mother or their father?
I think the family is the last hope society has, and I think we should, as Ger rightly says, we shouldn't have all these government rules brought in forcing you to either vaccinate children or to...
Well, we know that won't happen, but there's going to be
yeah, but you'd worry about these kites being flown, or will they fly these kites in the hope of putting a certain...
It's scaremongering.
...putting a certain amount of legislation through and leaving that one, but that one is the shadow that lets the rest through. And that's Ger's, I think, has explained this very well.
I think that people can be too sentimental about families, to be honest with you, Dermot. I mean, yeah. I know I agree what you're saying, but I do think that there are some occasions where the family is the worst place for the child to be.
Totally,
and
brilliant.
You have to be honest about that. Yeah, there are times when you've got to recognise it.
Also should be pointed out that... Also, should be pointed out that the minister is also looking to publish. This is Frances Fitzgerald, the children's minister. She's also looking at publishing a draft adoption legislation at the same time, so it can be debated. So that can be debated during the children's referendum campaign, because the laws on adoption here do need to be updated.
And wasn't there a lot of questions over the watching of fostering parents, the monitoring of fostering parents.
Well, this is it. And
some
of
them weren't vetted properly.
Yeah, and sometimes children go to other family members and they're not vetted at all. But then you have to look at that, and you have to compare that with the children who've been taken into state care, who have gone missing, who have died in state care. You know, and I mean, you're saying, well, the family's not always the best place. When you'd be looking and you'd be saying, well, they might have a better chance with an aunt who's not vetted than going into state care, where God knows what they're
absolutely. What kind of are we talking about? Garda vetting here? Are we talking about people being vetted to make sure that they're not abusers? What kind of vetting is that? What we're talking about?
How do you really vet a parent? In fact, how do we even measure parenthood? We don't know.
But parents aren't vetted. That's the very point.
Kids and still
I'm
not know
to
whether
make.
They're a good parent themselves, and they were there for the whole time. You know.
Yeah, but what we're talking about here is given children's rights, which they don't have, which they don't have now. So they don't belong to their parents. They're not. We have a dog, a car, and a child.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The child has to have it. Has to be recognised.
If the children are at risk, they need to be watched, and it needs to be monitored. And you know, it happens when it's too late. Oh, we should have had X, Y, and Z social worker looking here, there, or yonder. That needs to be a given, and not just something that's a whim of certain people.
Yeah, but the scaremongering that's going to come about now is that the child doesn't belong to the family, doesn't belong to the parents, but the child belongs to the state. So this is what's going to happen. Does the child belong to the family, or does the child belong to the state?
No, the child has rights within
as
a family member.
But
there's four people living in my house. All four have their rights, whether they're a child
Does the child, in light of this referendum, say it's passed, does the child then become simply a citizen? Is that what we're aiming for with
it
this referendum?
It sounds like it, doesn't
it? A citizen with rights.
Yeah, but I think that shouldn't happen, because if you look at society where a child goes into a creche or goes into a school, it has the benefit of a teacher close up, or it has the benefit of a minder in a creche or whatever. These people aren't 1,000 miles away from seeing that child, and if that's a disturbed child, they could recommend that the health board monitor that child. Take a look at it. Keep an eye on it. Because we've had 3 or 4 cases in Britain, and we've had 2 here in Ireland, where a death occurred because the services weren't looking at the situation. Now, this is criminal.
But what you should look at as well is, in a referendum, we're putting something into the constitution and we're giving the rights. There's not going to be a big workbook with this to tell people that there's a list of 76 things you have to do with your child. That's not what this referendum is about. What this referendum about is to give children rights and protections. That's what it's about. It's not a prescriptive list or anything like that. And you know, we as a society have to work through. We know ourselves, you know, the way industrial schools were, that people were told if you were bold you'd be sent up to the good shepherds and all this kind of stuff. So the knowledge was there in the community that this wasn't a good place to go.
How names often contradict exactly the good shepherds. I mean, but the image that term brings up is of lovely, gentle people.
The Christian Brothers.
Mm. That look after the little lambs.
The very name, yes, I know.
Anyway, so the point is that the message we're sending out is this referendum is coming up. Look out for it. Read it. Don't be biased just because you hate the government or you love the government. Or
no, it's too
either
important
way,
for
don't
that.
Vote
Much
for because you love them, or against it because you hate it. Don't believe everything that you read in the newspaper, because here on the radio, even us, don't believe us. Don't believe anything we say.
Everyone has an agenda.
Because they have an agenda, and everybody has an opinion as well, very strong opinions, and you don't know who used to be a social worker or who has a brother who's a drug addict and had his kids taken off or anything like that. You don't know where the people are coming from. So just keep that in mind. Probably whenever you're reading anything also.
People shouldn't be afraid if they've a neighbour or a friend through school whose child you know because they're visiting your house on a regular basis and you feel they're at risk. We should shout and have it looked into. Don't be feeling you're telling on somebody. You're looking after a vulnerable child. Any child up to the age of 4 or 5 is so vulnerable, it's unreal. And they're damaged at such an early age. It can't be corrected. And these people are usually, as we saw from people abused by the clergy, both male and female. These children were in their mid-30s or 40s before they were able to come to terms with talking about this. I mean, they've lost their life.
Yeah, it's a damaged life.
A damaged life. Yeah. They can't be repaired.
Well, again,
I mean, God damn it, we have to sit up and take notice and have a proper thing in policy in place.
Well, again, I think what we're doing here today as well is we're kind of letting people know, I suppose, what issues are going to come up. A lot of those issues, the ones we've talked about even so far today, they're going to come up over the next 3 or 4 months,
well,
and we're going to go into them
again.
And we're going to be going into a lot of those in more detail. So if you like what we're trying to do today, I suppose it's just
see
highlight some of the issues that are going on and that will be going on, and I suppose when they will come up, then we'd be more than delighted to hear from you on that.
When that draft is published, I think we should respect to the chair, when that draft is published, I think we should have a good debate here around this table.
And in fact, I'm going to jump the gun here now and invite anyone who works as a social worker or knows, you know, could come on and help us maybe discuss this subject, or people who have had experience with their children being taken away.
There's plenty of good people out there that we could bring in.
Absolutely, people who've gone through the fostering system and grown up from these situations, people who have real experience of the situation and who can really give some good advice. I have to go to 2 messages we have in. Betty, thank you so much for contacting us. It's lovely to hear from you again, Betty. She has pointed out that the judge makes the decision on divorce, not TDs. I suspect some legislation is needed before they can actually legislate on that, but then when the divorce is come before the court, of course, the judge decides whether or not you can get a divorce. And we have a message from Preston. How credible is a children's referendum when the political covering up of my protest outside the Dáil proves the debt of children? The Department of Children and Youth Affairs is twisted and corrupt, as is stated on my placard outside the Dáil. A child protecting father, grandfather, whistleblowing citizen, Peter Preston.
Very good.
Peter, well, thank you for contacting station. That was great. Now we're moving on to a slightly happier subject, although I have to say it's still sort of about children, and that's just showing my age, I suppose, because I do feel that this is about children. It's an article in the Irish Independent Weekend yesterday, which made me smile. It's about nougars. Nougars are the new cougars. Now, there was me aspiring to be a cougar, and I'm already... Yesterday's news is dreadful. For anyone who doesn't know what a cougar is, or hasn't had the pleasure of interacting with a cougar, cougars are older women who go for younger men. Ha-ha! At last! For years we've been listening about stories older men going with younger women.
I object to you promoting yourself on this station.
I'm doing my best. Well, no, this is the terrible thing, because cougars are yesterday. It's now nougars, and Cameron Diaz is pictured with her boyfriend that she had for three years, Justin Timberlake. Now, she was... 31, and he was 22, and they have lots of other photographs of Caroline Flack. Apparently, poor old devil got terrible flack, would you believe, when she went out with Harry Styles, who was only 18, and she's 32 as well.
In that case, you're reading, she might have been his nanny.
She probably could have, and I'd say she was a bit more than that by the sounds of it.
Protection bill.
And they have loads of photographs of these, as they're describing, older women, and one of Frida Pinto is only 24, being described as an older woman. Please, God, this is ridiculous. So here I am, just about to enter into the cougar time of life.
And
I've already missed the trendiness of it. What do you think, ladies? What do you think of this? Is this good?
Of course it's great. People should be free. People should be free to go out with whoever they like, provided they're of age.
Yeah.
Once the person is over 18, I really don't think it
just
matters.
Cases.
I don't know. I don't understand. Perhaps some women would find younger men attractive. I myself personally have never found them attractive. The reason being that they just can't talk about anything, really, except themselves.
Oh, we're going to get... a few young men calling in there, showing us how they can talk.
I'm sure they're lovely. There are lovely young men out there. I don't mean but that. I mean, in a personal relationship.
But you see, I can
find anything to discuss.
I can understand a woman of 40 going after a man of 25 because, intellect speaking, they'd be on the same level. You know.
Oh, Dermot. Now you're looking for trouble now.
Can I apologise for
and
Dermot?
Quickly, and very quickly.
On behalf of Dermot. Look,
two consenting
adults, if they find each other physically attractive or attractive for others, fair play to them. Yeah. But what I'd love to know is all these people who come up with these ridiculous names, like the Nougar and all this, you know. Yeah. I mean, Prinking now.
Prinking
is the one that I've come. Prinking is reaching epidemic
proportions.
It's not
rude, is it, Dan?
It's not rude, no.
And it's
taking up, and it's actually a very serious issue.
What is it, Ger?
Right.
And it affects probably thousands of people in this country.
What is it?
All right, I'll tell you.
No, I've never heard it before.
No, I've come across it during the summer. What
you've,
it
you've
is,
just made this up this morning now. This is about to go viral.
No. It can go viral if it likes. I don't get any money for that. But what prinking is, it's great building up.
What prinking is
basically, and it is serious, that a lot, especially younger people, before they go out drinking or before they go to the pubs and the clubs, they meet in somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
And get half scuttered there.
Private drinking sort of thing.
It's private drinking. But what it is five or six people, they get a few bottles in, and then they decide they'd empty those. They then put the contents into smaller bottles, depending
and
on what
Coke
venue
bottles.
They're going to bring them into if they're going to concerts and stuff, before concerts and stuff like that. And it
is. Do the young people think they've invented this?
No.
Because I've news for them.
Well, somebody has invented a term for it. But no, I think what's happening is that it's becoming a lot more.
I think it's
a lot more widespread. And again, if there's undercost selling of alcohol, and if there's special offers in the supermarkets, that's playing into that whole thing. So what people are saying, why go out and get two or three pints and cost you, say, 13 or 14 euros when you can have a gang's load of cans?
Yeah, I think it's par for the course now. And there was a time when, you know, people might have done a bit of drinking before they went out or maybe snuck some drinking. But I've actually been going places doing things and I've seen people tipping a vodka into a Coke bottle that they have that they're bringing with them. Young people, obviously. But, a lot of elderly
people have been doing that for ages.
But I think it's when you're looking
and
at people...
And they're right too with the cost.
Well, I'm talking about people now who are 18, who are very young and they're drinking a lot. It's a lot more than if you went in and got a shot of vodka or you bought it, you know, you wouldn't be drinking.
Is this taking place in their homes?
It's taking place behind hedges.
Yeah, so it's not the blue bag drinking.
But then it's down to the parents. Parents obviously have to step in and stop this. I mean, you can't have children going
out. Where are they getting the money?
You had
a
lot of this in the early 70s.
If they don't have money there, it's...
No, it's not so much... Some of them could be...
Is this over 18s now?
Oh, yes. We're very young to be drinking that amount. You know, when you were 18 and you went out for drink, you bought a few drinks, you bought what you could afford. But if you're going to buy a gallon of vodka, Polish vodka or whatever, in wherever, for €8... You're going to be drinking a hell of a lot more than you would have been if you just went out of a night with your friends and had a few drinks.
This is how we're getting younger men. They're absolutely twisted. About 7:30 in the evening, they're already drunk. Because I have to say, I can't hang around
till midnight. The women are actually taking advantage of them.
Waiting to pick up a younger man. If they're not interested by 8 o'clock in the evening, I've had it. I'm going home because there's telly on top. And I have to be in bed by 9:30.
Oh, God.
This is great.
No, but it is. This pranking, though, I just wanted to bring it to people's attention. No, okay, I hate these silly acronyms and stuff that the people come up for us, right? It's a pre-drinking thing. But, you know, it's something that we do need to think about, and it all goes back to, you know, the amount of alcohol intake in the population.
It has huge social implications, but the point is
it's the cost that is promoting that, and the cost will continue to promote it.
I remember back in the early 70s
in the Chariot Inn in Renla, they didn't pour you a drink. The waitresses queued up and they bought your bottles and brought it over to the table to you. There was no drink poured.
Dermot, now you're...
So people came in with those in their pockets as well. That's in the early 70s. Mm.
Just to finish up then, you're a non-drinker. You don't drink alcohol, do you?
I've yet to taste me first.
I think that's great. And I think, wouldn't it be nice to end it on perhaps encouraging people to entertain the possibility of a life without any alcohol whatsoever.
I thought you were going to invite Dermot out for a pint.
My philosophy has always been...
He's over 22, he's too old.
My philosophy has always been that I don't need to drink to be stupid.
No, yes. Touché, I like that one. And so say all of us. We've probably demonstrated that this morning. And thank you so much to our listeners for hanging with us now this morning. It's been terrific fun, actually. It really is lovely to be back in between the lines. We've touched on lots of subjects, which I hope we very likely will hear of again, I'm quite certain, in great detail. So thank you to all of our presenters, because everybody around the table here is a presenter in NEAR. Thank you very much to Pat Meehan for looking after us. Congratulations again, Ray Burke, for your... and we'll probably hear you, see you back next week.
There'll be no living with him now.
No living with Ray now after this. Yeah. Thank you very much, and have an enjoyable rest of your Sunday. Bye-bye.